We are back with another episode of the Dedication to Excellence podcast with Mind Coach Vinny Shorman. Welcome to the pod, my brother. Thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely. No, it's an absolute pleasure of mine. I'm honored to be on your podcast and speak to some wonderful people like you.
We appreciate that. So we'll just jump right into it. So from what I've gathered, Vinny, you help people deal with their mental issues, whether that be the pain, stress, anxiety, which of course, you know, we're recording this in the middle of COVID world. So that's important now more so than ever. And I say you've done a very good job of it, obviously, having done it for a long time now. So would you mind just at first diving a little bit deeper into what exactly it is you do to help people?
It's such an eclectic mix of things, what I do. And what's great about my job is when you have so many different minds, everyone's got a different mind and a different mindset. No two minds are the same. You know, we all want the same things. We all pretty much, you know, we share the same values, which is, you know, your unconscious beliefs, and everyone wants a degree of happiness and doesn't want to feel anxiety or depression and stuff like that. So it's such a wide subject, but so many different ways of people thinking that it's difficult to put it down into one sentence.
I asked. So when you're at the family,
it's a great question. It's all about the individual and what they, where the requirements depends. Everyone's got a different problem. Like I said, no two minds are the same. No two stories are the same. They may have similar traits. However, it's always interesting and different. So to put it in a nutshell, you can't, to be honest. It's just an interesting, very fulfilling job that I do.
Excellent. And how did you get into it?
I was going down a path that I shouldn't do. I split up with a partner that I was living with, my ex girlfriend. It's a few years ago now, and I was left. I had to leave my children. Basically, it was a toxic relationship. It was either I leave or a killer. Don't fancy going to prison, so I didn't. And then I started drinking a lot and putting things up my nose to make me dance better. All that sort of malarkey. And I was going down a wrong way for me to be, suffering from various bits of depression, anxiety, etc. And I went to a seminar by a very dear friend of mine called Keith Mayer. And I felt good and I didn't know why. And then I started hounding him as to what he'd done, what he'd talked about that made me feel so good. Yet I didn't really, there wasn't any, you know, cheesy metaphors in it all. It was all just very useful information, and I felt great, and that was it. I carried on pursuing the path that he put me on, really, which was NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, and different mindsets, etc., various bits of psychology and stuff like that. So, and the continuation of that is I still learn. I'm a really big fan of Mark Manson at the moment, Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is a fabulous book. And it's just a pursuit of trying to gain the best ways I can to help people out and myself.
Can you dive a little bit into NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, for those who aren't familiar?
Yeah, neuro means brain, linguistic is language, and programming is programming. So it's just mind-changing language, really. Deciphering what the person's saying, deciphering what's actually going on in the unconscious, and using language to change that thought process. It was made famous by John Grinder and Richard Bandler, who based themselves on a work of Milton Erickson, who was a fantastic hypnotherapist from your country. And they based the work on him and various psychology stuff. And it's gone on from strength to strength and got better and better. And there's more and more great people out there doing it, like the likes of Tony Robbins, the likes of Tad James, the likes of Colin Mackay, who's my teacher, and various people. And it's using language to change people's mindsets.
Do you have some examples of that you kind of use to coach your clients when how they can apply it immediately into their life that I could, if I was a listener right now, I can take and maybe immediately take action on?
Yeah, focus on what you want, not what you don't want. So you focus in most of the time when clients come to me, they're in effect. So they're in the effects of what they think. So they're feeling the effects of what they think, and you're trying to get them at cause. You're trying to get them to be the cause of their, basically take responsibility of their own thoughts, which is, can be very difficult for some people. So, you know,
how do you have that conversation with a very high level person? Because I know you work with some very big names, and maybe they don't want to hear that things are their fault because the ego can kind of get in the way. Is that what you see a lot?
I don't see them any different than anybody else. So I don't judge them. I've got a few very wealthy, very successful clients in business world, sports people, a very famous YouTuber I've got now. And yeah, I mean, I don't speak to them any different. And most people, they're susceptible to anyway, because they've asked me to help them. So they're willing to want to change. So yeah, and they don't really get that focus on what you don't. If they've got an ego and they're not very palatable, they're not funny with me, I don't work with them. Simple as that. It's simple. I don't work with people I don't want to. It's my prerogative. So yeah.
So did this work stem from you kind of just having to overcome your own issues, and then once you did that, you went and started teaching others how to do the same thing?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think it's all sort of what I know works. I wouldn't do what doesn't work. So yeah, I've had experience of being in certain situations, certain feelings, certain ways of being, suffering from anxiety, suffering from upset or anger issues, whatever. I've had all them to some degree. I haven't had them as bad as other people, and I'll admit that, but you know, we've all had bits of it. We all suffer somewhere along the line in life from a life will, regardless of how we want it to seem, life will piss on us sometimes from a great height. And I can't explain why it happens, but we have to learn to gain a resilience. It's not so much I've been really big on resilience at the moment, because especially in the COVID times that we're in, that resilience is needed. You know, it's all right saying positive thinking and think positive and blah, blah, blah. It all sounds very fluffy. But I mean, the realism is that resilience has to be there, because, you know, sometimes the greatest people can have the worst things happen to them, or the worst people can have the greatest things happen to them, or whatever, vice versa. You know, life is very unpredictable, as we all know. I mean, who would have thought this time last year that the whole world would have been locked down, and there was like hundreds of thousands of people die of this horrific, for some, virus. And that's the whole world. So we don't know that. We didn't know that. We didn't predict it. No one was looking at the secret or the law of attraction to make that happen. You know what I mean? So for me, it's just one of those things where we have to learn resilience more than anything else at the moment. And I think resilience will get you through, rather than just pretending that life's always happy, because it isn't. It's nice when it's nice, and when it's bad. So, but it's resilience that we have to have to get us through the darker times.
And what are some tips you have on building your resilience?
Our experience builds your resilience. And unfortunately, resilience is built through pain. You know, we're all going to suffer some type of pain, whether it be physical, mental, that's pretty much covered, hasn't it? Physical and mental and emotional pain. And it's just about learning that it'll pass, learning that you have a trust in yourself to be able to endure this, and just have an example of other people. So, for instance, I've got a friend called Karen who works for me, and she's got breast cancer, and she's had a terrible year where some of her treatments have been cancelled. She's got two kids. Only very young, what one's think 7, and a daughter's like 12, thinks her daughter's 13. Her husband has gone through turbulent times with his business as well, with work and stuff like that. Her business that she had suffered. And I look at other normal people. Well, I can't say normal about Karen, because she has gone through and endured things. Yet her resilience is incredible. So we look around for all these spectacular people on Instagram or TV stars or whatever, and when you can find people who are probably in your life, maybe your parents or your brother or sister or a cousin or whatever, whatever, a friend that's absolutely endured things. And you've got to think about what would they think? What would they do? You know, I go to the gym and I don't want to train. I'm 51 years of age. I've just had a hip replacement this year. I've had COVID, blah, blah, blah. My kid's mum got put in prison last year. All that sort of business. And you learn resilience through, you know, experience. But you've also got to look at what other people would do. You know, you get inspiration from normal people. Yet they're not normal. They go above and beyond the call of whatever. So sometimes looking at another person and asking yourself what they would do. So, for instance, I'm quite embarrassing telling this, but I'll tell you anyway. I was thinking on Saturday, didn't want to go training because at where I work, I'm allowed to go in where I work and where I work because I've got an office in the gym. So I can go in there because I've got a key and there's nobody in there. So I can go and train on my own on the bags, boxing. And I thought, I don't want to go. It's cold. It's been snowing. I don't really want to be cold in there. And I thought to myself, what would Andre Ward do? What would Andre Ward say? And Andre Ward said, you've got to go. You've just got to go. So I just thought, right. And I went. Although, of course, Andre Ward's not speaking to me. You know, I'm psychic, but telepathic. But we all have an ingrained archetype of who we look up to in our minds. And even if it's a relative that's passed away, say, what would your grandma want? Would your grandma say about training? Say, you get yourself down there and go, okay. So there's someone that we have as a positive role model in our minds who we can metaphorically ask, and they always come up with a positive answer. So that's another way of learning resilience is doing what somebody else, someone you look up to would do. And that's the way you can learn resilience. But experience brings resilience, which is difficult.
Excellent. Excellent. I hope that answers
your question, by the way.
No, definitely does. Would you say that's what you typically diagnose or prescribe to people when they come to you? You help them find an example in their own life or an experience in their history that...
Yeah, cool. Brilliantly said. Yeah, I mean, if you can find your own resilience... Like a guy came to me, a young man came to me, and he come in and he looked dishevelled, a bit upset, and he said to me, I want to feel like a man. I said, oh, what do you mean? He says, oh, I was raped when I was by my own dad, my sister was raped and my mum was raped by my dad, and I want to feel like a man. And I just said to him, what you just said and walked in and said that to me takes more of a man than I've ever known. You already have that. It's already in you. It's already around you and stuff like that. So I know it's a bit harsh thing to say, but these are cruel realities of somebody's life. And I just said to him, you don't need resilience of me. You don't mention resilience. I just said, but how can you say you're not a man when you've openly admitted that and walked in and said that? I says, that is just an incredible thing to admit, to say, and to come out with, you know, and not take him on the down the road of what other people may have to use to stop that sort of horrific pain, which I cannot comprehend. But you know, even him and stuff like that, and him saying that, shown that he has a level of resilience that and strength that goes beyond the call of anybody's life, you know?
So you help people deal with some pretty heavy life shit that they're coming to you with.
Of course. Yeah, and people just think because I work with various sports people and stuff, that I just work with all the glamour side of life. I don't. I work with the darker bits of life and the other more upsetting things. But there's no snobbery with me. You know, I work with everyone. I can't work with everybody because I'm very busy, but I still work with everybody from all walks of life because that's what I like doing. That's why I have an office. I still have people. I still see people face to face. I think the human interaction is sadly missing because, you know, we don't talk anymore. We text or we, you know, we WhatsApp or we you know, we have bits. There's not none of that physical interaction. And obviously can't with the COVID.
How have you seen that shift in the way we communicate as a human species affect mental health over the years, just in your practice?
Do you know what's weird? What's really strange? If you look now at there's two things. if you look at a teenager's handwriting, it's atrocious. It's atrocious. You look, honestly, it is weird. You look at it and you think it's looked like it's done by a 4-year-old because they don't have to write anymore. They don't have to use a pen.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's weird, and you think they're really out of touch with, you know, everything I did was pen and paper, you know, and sometimes
it's. And they made us write in cursive too. What was up with that?
Well, they took it out now.
Do kids no longer have to write in cursive anymore?
No.
No. Oh, okay. No, it's strange. And also foveal vision. Peripheral vision is where you can see everything. Like, I've got great peripheral vision because I can see you while I'm talking to you, a very handsome young man. But I can also see myself. I can see the dog. I can see the TV. And I can see my room, yeah? A whole room.
Mm-hmm.
With what's happening, because younger people are staring into phones, like I'm staring into this iPhone now, foveal vision is happening, in not peripheral vision. So accidents will happen more often. Kids will get run over more because their attention is digital dementia, isn't it? That's what's happening.
Digital dementia. Wow. Yeah. Actually, just recently I saw this kid. He was a teenager. Yeah, literally just walking, facing his phone. And yeah, I just watched him walk right into a pole and get jarred.
Yeah, It's not surprising because their awareness. And what's also happening is, no one really can communicate. There's pluses and minuses to technology, but the minus definitely is that digital dementia and writing and stuff like that, and it's a strange old world at the moment.
Even starting so young, I mean, I've got a almost 5-month-old, and my wife has this group of everybody that was supposed to have a baby in that month. And they just send pictures and videos, and all of them, they literally just shove their baby right in front of a TV. Like, they're like, oh, he loves it. My child tries to look just because it's engaging, looking at different types of moving objects and the light and the blue light. But no, I was like, that's, you know, and then they wonder why they have issues with their kid going to sleep. It's just, that is their babysitter now. And it's starting at such an incredible young age. It's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a son who's 19 and he's into animation. He's going to go to university soon. He's a great kid. But he's TV obsessed.
Mm.
I mean, I can talk to him on FaceTime. And listen, he's a good kid. He's not a bad person. But I can be talking to him and I'll see his eyes all the time just dart back to his TV. You know, maybe I'm a bit boring, his dad, you know, but I mean, it's a strange thing. But, you know, it is what I'm from a different age, a different era. But I am seeing changes, especially writing, it's atrocious. Mm. And foveal vision becoming very prominent as well.
Yeah, my child's head, like, she walks in the room, and if there's a TV on in the room, she'll, like, turn her head on a swivel and stare at it. Like, it is a form of addiction.
It is a form of addiction, yeah. And it's just one of those things where it's just the moving with the times, really. I mean, they probably said that about radio, didn't they? When radio come out, no one will ever listen to anyone anymore. They'll just listen to radio all the time. So maybe I'm being old, but I just think writing should be part of what kids should learn still.
Agreed.
You know?
So it's a bold statement there, man. I don't know. I don't know if we're gonna get flagged for that one.
It is what it is.
So hey, you can look at it as a positive. We're creating a next generation of people with mental issues for you to have to help. So we're continuing to
build your client base. It's all future money in the bank. No, it doesn't mean to say they're gonna have mental issues. It doesn't mean to say that at all, does it? I mean, you know, if writing's not really needed, because they don't have to do it, then fine. You know, and if they are walking into lampposts more often or street signs or whatever, as long as not getting run over, then maybe they'll learn from banging the head. But I just think that it's shortening vision, and the writing's atrocious. But like, if it's not needed, it's not needed. But I don't know. But I think you still should be able to use a pen and paper, you know?
Yeah.
100%. If we could switch gears here a little bit too, I want to speak to another part of your practice, and that's hypnotism. I know you famously got a chance to hypnotize Joe Rogan, as you've been on his podcast a few times now.
Yeah.
So talk to us about hypnosis and the science behind it and how you've used it to help people overcome their problems and all things hypnosis.
I do use hypnosis, but I don't use it all the time. And for the simple reason is, it's there is an air of wonderment with hypnosis, an air of mystical, magical things, you know. But hypnosis is self-hypnosis. So all I do is suggest that the client does the work, the client's mind does the work, and I just put in things or remove things that out of their way and replace stuff. With hypnosis, you always have to, if you're removing something, you always have to replace it. It's just the way it is. Don't leave a void. It's one of the no-nos in hypnosis. When I hypnotized Joe Rogan, it was one of those things where it was resilience. If I wouldn't have gone on hypnosis, if I had not been able to hypnotize Joe, my whole career would have been ruined. 100%. Imagine going on Joe Rogan and not hypnotizing him. And then Joe Rogan saying, right, let's sit here for 2 hours as a guest live talking about how it works. So it was very, very nerve-wracking. But Joe being Joe, an open-minded, great individual friend. And and he went under and it works. But it's like, I don't always use it. I am a hypnotherapist and I do think it's very good for some things. But I like my clients to come to their own conclusions. That I edge them towards. So when they get edged towards an answer and they come up with their own answer and they go, and then you can see the eureka moment. I enjoy that more than putting what I think in there.
Yeah.
Do you just know?
So
I prefer it for people to go, come to their conclusion and go, I've been doing this for years and I've never thought of that. And you go, well, you know.
So is there any truth to the thought that you have to be not so much gullible, but you have to just be able to be suggestible?
No. Some people will follow orders better than others.
Mm-hmm.
So some people will follow what you'll say better than others. Or some of the people are better at instruction than others. But you're not gullible. You're not stupid. The more intelligent you are, they say, the more likely you will go under because you're really sort of follow instruction. You're able to follow things to the letter. No, there's no truth in that. There's no truth in you're more gullible. You won't do anything against your will. There's mm-hmm. none of that sort of truth in that, really. Not that I've come across. Although, when Derren Brown does his specials, which are on Netflix, and he's a fantastic, Derren Brown's also a magician, a hypnotherapist, and a psychological games. They do a selection process where they will find the person that will follow it to the letter. So you could say they're the most susceptible, if you will.
Mm.
I think it's susceptible and all that. Like, I think it's a bit insultive to the person. But any of his specials are always used with the person that is the best candidate to do that. But to be honest, no, I don't think it's gullible in any way, shape, or form.
So a prior interview we just had recently, Jeremy Haynes, he's a very big advocate of like peak performance hypnotisms. He has somebody that he regularly goes to and uses like light therapy to kind of replicate the more hypnotherapy kind of suggestible to himself and his thoughts. But yeah. I mean, have you seen a lot of that as well? Clients incoming or any benefit to that?
Hugely. I've had people praise me for winning world titles and, you know, winning fights and going in. Eddie Alvarez famously mentioned me on the one championship after he won when he was deemed finished. Liam Harrison, a very dear friend of mine, fighting in a rematch against Anawat Kiao Samrit in a Thai fight. He mentioned that on Joe Rogan. Joe Schilling, when he won the Glory World Series, when he won 150 grand. So, there's many examples of it, but it's what it's useful for. And what it's useful for me in a therapeutic way, you know, if people want to get hypnotized, I'll hypnotize them. But it has to be for a purpose. I have a few people who have said, I just want to get hypnotized. What for? Well, I just want to see what it's like. No, I don't use it for that. I don't just hypnotize people just and then. You know, well, how does that work? It doesn't work for me. So it's, yeah, if people go and they regularly go and see a hypnotherapist and it makes them feel good and makes them feel better and they perform better, then, yeah, crack on. It's just another part of the structure of success, really.
Yeah, I feel a lot of people have related it too much to, like, let's say, quitting smoking and making somebody hop around like they think they're a chicken.
I can do that. I can genuinely do that. And on my hypnosis course, we were taught to do that. But I don't. If people want to make pricks of themselves, let them make pricks of themselves in a different way. You know, I'm not going to do that. And I don't do it for fun. I don't do my job for fun. I do it because I like to see people come out of darkness. It might sound a bit chivalrous, really, but to be honest, it is chivalrous in my way. I just believe it's the purpose of hypnosis wasn't ever to make you think you're Tina Turner or pretend that you're a baby or whatever. So, nah.
Mm-hmm.
The people that do that as well, the people that get up on stage and start doing all this mad stuff, they're the type of people that are the first people to dance at a wedding or the first people to grab a karaoke mic, or you know what I mean? So
that's totally generally
the consensus.
I had a question in my head that when you said that the first person to get up and dance at a wedding, I just instantly, my head went to that because it's like, oh, he's talking about me. I wanted to ask. So you deal with these high performers that are already, you know, from the surface level, from the outside looking in, are already doing great in life. What have you seen? And I know you said no two minds are the same, but I know you probably noticed some patterns as well. What is typically that mental gap that stops someone going from good to being great?
I work with two very, very clever businessmen, and they're into the e-commerce world. It's Chase Hero and Zach Foldman. And they have a group called The Watchers and The Watchers Eye and stuff. And that they teach people how to do brilliant level of e-commerce. With Zach and Chase, they show up every day. They show up. They are there every day. And that's what it takes. It takes showing up. You know, you're not going to be brilliant every day. That's just fact. But as long as you're there. So I deem it like this. It's like playing darts. If me and you was have a game of darts, right, you'd probably win because I'm rubbish. But if we're playing darts, when you was a kid, when you was throwing darts at a dartboard, you always wanted to hit the bullseye. It was just the thing to hit. It wasn't the treble 20, which is the more higher scoring number. It was always the bullseye. Now, you could play darts and I could play darts, but throwing one of us is going to hit the bullseye eventually, right? It'd probably be you. And like we're running around and you'd be excited. Yeah, I got the bullseye. What it's about, though, is the more often that we throw them darts, the more likelihood we're going to hit the bullseye. It's just practice. Sometimes we'll hit it. Great. Sometimes we'll not. But it's all about throwing the dart. It's about being involved at still aiming. And that's what they do. It's the still aiming. They might not get bullseye every time, or they are pretty good at hitting bullseye, to be honest, where money's concerned and having brilliant success. But it's all about still throwing the dart. If it bounces out, you pick it up. If you miss the bullseye, you still keep having a shot. Even if you get close to it or near it, or you get the 25, which is around the bullseye, great. But it's all about keep throwing. And that's what I think. It's all about turning up and keep throwing and keep throwing. And persistence, again, resilience. And just all the time, just aiming for what you want and keep on keeping on.
There it is, that inconvenient truth, people. You just got to show up and put in the damn work. There is no easy way around it.
There isn't. Everyone that's a success, it hasn't really come easy. You know, everyone's got a story that would make somebody else cry. Mm. You know, everyone's got a story. You could tell me a story about your life, something happened in your life or your family member or, you know, that would be extremely upsetting. And then you think, how do you manage this and stuff? Because we have an innate resilience. We have that innate resilience within us. Sorry, someone rang me. We have an innate resilience within us for us to push forward. And we all have it in us. It's intrinsic. How do you think we learned to walk? How do you think we learn to speak, to spell, to write, I was going to say, but they're not learning to write anymore, are they? You understand? It's all about, we all felt stupid. We all felt upset. We all didn't know how to spell our names once upon a time. But resilience kept us going. You know, to say you haven't got it, to say we haven't got resilience is, first of all, you're lying to yourself. And secondly, you can rely on it because it's within us. It's will, basically.
Of course. And there you go again, saying that the best way a lot of times to overcome that is look for an example in others that kind of puts things in perspective. Like, here I am complaining in my feelings about something, but hey, you know, at the end of the day, there are still 20 million people without access to clean water. So let's put things into perspective here.
I know we're coming. That can be difficult though, because it's relevance to us. Mm-hmm. But I think what we have to do within ourselves, you know, is think of an example of, because we've all got examples of who we looked up to, regardless if it's real or fictional. It doesn't matter. You think, oh, what would Tony Stark do? You know, it doesn't matter. It's just about what would they do? What would they, and you'd actually start to tap into their mindset, their perceived mindset, and it would give you the positive answer. So you have the answers in that. Look, we've all got will. That's why we learn to walk. If we didn't have the will, we'd still be crawling. So we have it.
Very good. Well, hey, I know we're coming up on time here. Got a few minutes left, so we can get you to your TV show that you want to catch.
No, it's maybe... okay. I've got 20 minutes yet. Sorry.
Oh, perfect, perfect. Okay. Well, then I guess I'm not going to bring it down the home stretch. But what other quick hitting tips do you have for people to help just improve their mindset overall, based on what you've seen?
It's all about. It depends on what you want. It depends on how you want to be, you know, and it depends on where you see yourself in life, you know. Procrastination's a big one, because people tend to lose faith in something very quickly. We live in a microwave age where everything's done fast, quickly. You can pay for something quickly, where, you know, on your phone, whereas years ago you'd have to go line up in a queue and pay and at the front of a store, as you call it in America. Now it's, everything's instantaneous. I think patience is something that people have to learn, but it's because things are that quick, patience is being took away. I think what people, if they want to, is to gain a better perspective on the world, is the way I look at it is this: everything's your job. So we go to work, we do our best because we want to get paid, we want to maybe get a promotion. Great stuff. I understand that. It's logical. We have to have jobs because we live in a material world where we have to pay for things. Yes, I understand. But I think everything should be your job. So I think everyone should do physical exercise, because your body's your job. I think the way you speak to people, the way you conduct yourself to people in shops, people that have maybe as deemed as lesser jobs than you, or lesser careers, they should be treated with respect. I think you should treat everyone with respect and be as kind as you can to everybody. I think you should be as healthy as you can. I think you should respect your body. I think you should be knowing that everything is to do with your job, educating yourself, reading, looking at people that have, you know, like brilliantly, like Mark Manson, who I'm into at the moment, is fabulous, or Carol S. Dweck, or Matthew Syed, or, you know, looking at people like Tony Robbins, whoever, who've got a positive outlook and a positive mindset. And even Mark Manson, who talks about the downfalls of life, but the teaching and understanding about resilience and stuff, I think we should search them out, you know, and just treat ourselves as a project. You know, if you're better to you, you're better to other people. If you're better to other people, your work will be better, your life will be better. If you treat yourself healthily and you're looking after your body, you're going to be on the world longer, the planet longer. Statistics say if you get yourself fit and healthy, you'll be around longer. And I think that anyone that has children writes an unwritten law, like your friend there, writes an unwritten rule, right? That once you've got children, you sign an unwritten contract, I believe, when they're born, to be around as long as you can for them. No doubt. They'll need you regardless of how old they are. They'll always be your kids. So you've got to be as healthy, fit and strong as you can. So if the time comes when they'll need you, because like I said, life pisses on everybody, that they'll need that fatherly or that motherly advice, you know? That's what I believe. I think you should treat yourself as a project.
So I think everyone, of course, has the goal of being healthy, fit and strong and becoming financially successful and doing all these things. But you mentioned something that I think stops a lot of people in their tracks, and that's procrastination.
Yeah.
So what is the psychology behind procrastination? Why do people procrastinate, and how do you help them overcome that?
It's the path of least resistance. The unconscious mind likes it the easiest way. Doesn't mean it's the right way though, does it? So it's the easiest way. Let's face it. If you could order a pizza, or you could cook yourself some chicken and make a chicken salad, which is easiest? The easiest to go, hello, is that blah, blah, blah? Yeah, I love pepperoni and whatever. You know what I mean? It's easier, much, much easier. It's about, again, resilience. And the resilience in a way that's different, where you're going, right, now I'm not going to have that. So you're denying yourself the pizza and making a salad, which is harder because it's more effort. The way to break procrastination is like you eat an elephant one spoon at a time. So you take your time, you break it up into small bits. You do little things that you didn't do yesterday but you're going to do today. Then that'll carry you on till tomorrow. Do you understand? So it's just about adding tiny little bits.
1% every day.
Tiny little bits of things. Sorry?
1% every day.
Yes, sir. It's a little something every day. That's all it is. What happens with people? I'm all for setting goals. I understand. Brilliant. But setting yourself these really big goals when you're not got the basis of something, you've got to do things in small steps. People, like I said, the microwave world, they want everything instantaneously, right? But with mindset and with change your thought patterns and processes, takes time, because your mind will want to go back to what it used to. Yeah. So it'll go back to old behavior. Because it's always worked for me, I'll keep doing it. When you have to break that by going, no, we're not doing that anymore.
Vinny, so I got to say, I'm a little disappointed here, man, because I came into this thinking you're going to give that one secret mindset hack that would just change everything overnight for somebody. But what I'm hearing is you have to put in work. You have to be consistent. Mm-hmm. You have to be resilient. And none of these sound like easy answers. So I'm kind of upset about that. I wanted the easy out.
Well, if you hire me, I will tell you the magic secret. No, look, it's no different for anyone in the world. And it's no different for me. The repetition is the art of learning. Everything has to be repetitious. To think that you've done something once and then that'll be it, it's like, no, it doesn't work like that. It's all about being, it's all about showing up. It's all about being repetitious, and it's all about focusing on what you want and having the resilience to, when it doesn't go your way, not to crumble. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still looking for that secret nugget, man. You're killing me here.
there is, but I can't tell you, because then you'd be successful like me, and you have your own castle.
I love it. So I want to ask, though, how did you navigate your career to end up becoming to where you are now? Because there are a lot of mindset people out there, but you've obviously risen up the ranks and, you know, made a name for yourself. Like, what is it that you did differently internally that has helped you get to the top?
Some won't say I'm anywhere other than where. I don't know, man. I don't know whether. There was elements of luck, but there was also elements of I took a risk where other people wouldn't. So the way I got well known is I started doing this job anyway, and it was getting success with people in England. And then when I found out that Joe Schilling, who I knew anyway, was fighting in the Glory World Series, I just messaged him out the blue and said, look, do you think you fancy letting me help you with the mindset of it all? And he said, sure, why not? And then I helped Joe. He won the fight. He won a lot of money. I was, like I said, 150 grand, and we had quite a lot of success a few times, and he did things that he wasn't meant to. And then he was invited onto the Joe Rogan Experience, And then Joe was asking him, and then he said, oh, I hired a mind coach, Vinny Shorman. And then Joe got intrigued. What's a mind coach? Then I DM'd Joe on Twitter. Said, thank you for mentioning me on your podcast. I appreciate it. And Joe said, if you're ever in town, I'd love to have you on. And I made myself in town to go on. I took a risk, because if I'd have gone on Joe Rogan's show, like I said earlier, and not been able to hypnotize him, my whole career would have been ruined instantaneously. So I took a risk. Other people won't. Or other people should. I'm not saying they won't because I don't know them. But I mean, other people should. But you have to, I think with this job, honestly, I think you've got to have a love of people. I think you've got to have a love of seeing people get well, if that makes sense. Seeing people break out of shadows, you know? If you haven't got that, it was interesting. I got a guy and he messaged me and he said, oh, I'd love to work with you and all this sort of stuff. I was like, right. He said, yeah, really big fan of your work. We just flattered by and appreciated, of course. And then when I seen his Instagram, he's like the world's number one hypnotist. I was like, dude, listen, I'm not the fucking number one hypnotist in the world. So you're not. And you're asking me to help you. He's like, no, I don't like that. There can be a lot of ego. I know that Joe won the world. Joe won the world glory world series, not me. Liam won against Anouar, not me. Joe got hypnotized, not me. If I go on about me and, oh, yeah, I'm fucking marvellous and this like stuff like that, I wouldn't be me. I wouldn't enjoy it and I wouldn't get the results I get, because I know it's all about the client. I'm just a postman of information. I just suggest, I just offer advice. If they follow it and it works, fantastic. If they don't follow it, it doesn't work. Well, that's up to them, isn't it? So I believe that with me, what sets me apart, if it does set me apart in any way, is I've got an incredible amount of empathy and an incredible amount of passion wanting people to succeed. I enjoy it.
Very good. So you subscribe to your own lessons of show up, be consistent. You still didn't give me the secret there, but it's fine.
Yeah, but I mean, look, some days I don't want to fucking do it. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes my phone will ring and it'll say, blah, blah, whoever is calling. I'm like, oh, fuck off. I'm not going to lie. No, come on. no one in the world goes, and I love it every day. You're like, really? You go, oh, fuck. And then you end up talking to them. You realise you always end up talking to them. You always have a good conversation. You always end up well. And I don't work with who I don't want to work with anyway. So, yeah, everything's all right, really, because I don't work with who I don't want to, you know?
Business is
so that's powerful to me.
But you can't divorce it.
It can't what?
It's business is like marriage, but you can divorce your business.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not always easy. It takes work and you got to show up every single day.
Yeah, you got to show up. You got to be willing. You got to want to get better. I think with my job, you know, you never know everything. You know, and I never believe I know everything. And I never believe that, you know, I'm always learning off clients. And yeah, I just think you've got to show up and you've just got to do sometimes, you know, you got to grind away. And some days are better than others. But to be honest, I do have the best job in the world and I genuinely love it. But like, there is moments of it when I'm like, fuck off. But I mean, when you're like, sure. You know, like your wife saying, oh, I'm going to go and stay at my sister's for 2 days. And you go, don't lie. I mean, ladies must out there, the husbands, and they go away and they think, yes, fuck off.
I love it. You know so if I mean? You're looking no. for, I was going to say, if you're looking for an example of resilience, people just know that a top mindset expert and mind coach has days where he's like, fuck this.
Of course. I think that's... Look, listen, I am not going to bullshit anyone. I do not fucking walk on water. Not in the slightest. But sorry, my dog's got a cough. She's got on my chest. But it's my dog. Yeah, she said thanks in dog world. But, you know, look, you've got to be able to know that every day isn't going to be, you know, wake up every day. And even the Dalai Lama has a shit day. Think of the Bible. I'm not into God or anything like that. People are like, it's fantastic. I hope you enjoy it. But it's like Jesus. I remember there was a story about Jesus. And when Jesus, there was an effigy, there was a false God. And Jesus smashed up a market. I mean, he smashed up a market and went mad. It was, well, you know, they're human beings. So we're not going to have wonderful times. And even the metaphor of the Bible was saying that, you know. And it's just, look, it's not going to be wonderful every day. But if you have more good days than bad days, you're having a good life.
I love it.
If you have more good days than bad days, you're having a good life. Fact.
Absolutely. Well, Vinny, now we're coming up on time, so I can bring it down the home stretch and you can enjoy your program there. But just before I do that, any final thoughts on mindset before we ask you our signature last question?
I just say that, look, if you want to work with a mind coach, if your life's not going where you want it to be and you want to feel better about yourself, then go and find a mind coach. And just keep reading, keep learning. We're never finished products. If you're willing to look at yourself and you know, strip bare naked in the metaphorical mirror and see what areas you need to change, if you're willing to do that and you're brave enough to do that, then, you know, your life can change exponentially, 100%.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely. So, Dustin, you want to bring it home?
Perfect. All right, Vinny. So our signature question, I love the diversity of answers. So I'm intrigued and I'm excited to hear yours, is being the Dedication to Excellence podcast. What does it mean in your mind with your experiences in past to live a life in dedication to excellence?
It's all about, it sounds in a real selfish way of putting it, but it's always about you. You are what you see. You are what you project. What is the world. If you're not happy inwardly and you're not working on finding the best things in the world, you're not going to see them unless your inward world is as bright as it can be or as positive as it can be. So always make yourself a real project. I'm not talking about being selfish and all that sort of business in any way, but I'm saying that make sure that the project that you are is worked on every day. Regardless of some days you put more work in than others, but make sure that the project that you are in your best you can possibly be in every way, shape or form. You're going to have shit days, I understand that. But keep working, keep pushing, and like I said, keep throwing the dart at your board.
Absolutely love it. You change the outer world by changing the inner world. And there's no shortcuts. There is no microwave. You got to slow roast this bad boy to success. Vinny, thank you so much for stopping by the podcast. No, we definitely appreciate your time. Now you can throw this under your bio. You can say, hey, not only was I on Joe Rogan, but I was on the Dedication to Excellence. And, you know, your stock just went up significantly.
You know what? I appreciate you asking me, man, you know, because, you know, I talk for a living. And I'm sure some people love it, some people hate it. But I appreciate your time. No, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you considering me. I hope everybody's happy, healthy and strong. And let's hope that this COVID thing passes over soon so we can all have a hug and see each other over a beer or something, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely, brother. Last question. Where can people find you and follow your journey?
You can get me on Vinny Shorman on Instagram. You can get me on vinnyshorman.com. Or if you want to look at some life-changing videos, you want to join my subscription service, you can join the Shorman Solution, which is a series of tips, videos about anxiety and stuff like that. There's also some hypnosis downloads over there, so go out and enjoy it.
But if you want the secret, you got to hire him. So we'll go ahead and leave it right there.
Yeah, and I'm very, 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 very expensive.
Perfect, brother. Well, hey, again, appreciate you for tuning in and for everyone listening in. The love and support that you guys have been showing has been great, so definitely keep that coming. We love it. We do this because we want to give back. So please, if you haven't already, subscribe, leave a review. We'll be back on next time with another amazing guest, I'm sure. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. Vinny, stay blessed, brother, until we can hop over the pond and hang out and have a beer. With that, we signing out. Everyone stay blessed. Peace.
Much love. Bye-bye.